We're listening to In Flames from the hard rock group Janice. Yes, you are listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The band formed and released their first studio album about 2 decades ago with a sound similar to the grunge era. Think Soundgarden. But life has a way of changing us, and bands, they too go through an evolution. Janice, you could say, is older and wiser, taking up social causes now with its music today. What questions do you have for David Scottney, the frontman of Janice? What do you think of bands that try to raise awareness or funding for social causes through their music? We're at 800-642-1234. David Scottney is a singer and songwriter for Janice. That is a rock group based in Chicago, toured with groups like Chevelle, Seven Dust, and Breaking Benjamin. He also runs pizzerias in Lake Geneva and one coming to Kenosha later this year. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's start with the first song you released under this new label called Music for Good. You covered the song Drive by the Cars, which is circa 1984. What attracted you to that particular song?
So it's interesting. It was very serendipitous how it all kind of came together. So I had been wanting to get back into that creative space of songwriting and singing and kind of reawakening just the creative side of my artistic side. And I was actually kind of going through a period of time where my family was really struggling to kind of rally around a family member that was struggling with bipolar disorder. And I didn't know anything about it. My family didn't really know anything about it. So we were kind of at the same time trying to understand it, support a family member with it. And at the time, I had heard that, the original version of the song, and I had the lyrics kind of piqued my curiosity. And there's really, really dark lines in that song. Who's going to hold you down when you scream? I mean, there's really dark stuff in that. And then so I just was intrigued by the song, and I looked and I watched the original video, and clearly that song's about mental health. And I didn't get that when I first heard it, and I don't think a lot of people know that that song's about mental health. So the time I had kind of realized that that song was all about that, I had this idea to kind of reimagine it as a rock tune, to kind of take an old sludgy keyboard-based 80s song and turn it into kind of a metal song, and that was really the challenge. And
let's take a listen. Oh my God, Dave, that's such a great cover.
And, oh, thanks.
You know, when you sent the email and you sent this and I listened, it is something so moving because the original song is so slow, yeah. So much slower, and it feels like our lives have gotten so much faster. And then with the music video, you are throwing all of these statistics very fast about bipolar disorder. What are you trying to get across there?
So what I wanted to try and do with the video, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that song being faster because it's actually the exact same tempo as
the
original. No, it's the exact same BPM and tempo. I just kind of leaned into kind of those 16th note accents and stuff to just try and make it feel like there's more energy to it. With the video particularly, and kind of with the formula that we've put together for these videos, every song that we're doing takes a long time because we produce a video with it, so that we really put a mission out there into the world. And with the actual messaging in the video, we wanted to surface statistics about bipolar disorder to really help bring awareness to the cause. So things that I wish I had someone had told me, or I was made aware of about the disorder, so that I was a little more prepared for how to support a family member. And so we try to sprinkle in anything that we do with statistics that people might not be aware of to try and educate people that might not have any idea of what it's really about.
We're discussing music from Janice frontman David Scottney with us. You can join in. What social causes do you hope would get more attention through music? Which issues do you want to hear more songs about? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So Janice released a couple albums before your group's hiatus, Red Right Return in 2009 and Nox Aris in 2012. How are you approaching music differently now under a new label?
So those two records were so the songwriting process is entirely different. So the way that we used to work and the way that a lot of those songs were put together, there was a guitar player, his name is Mike Taransky, that basically wrote all of those songs. And the process would start with an idea from him or a demo or a sketch of something, and then I would craft lyrics to that. And melodies to that, and sometimes we were successful. Sometimes it wouldn't go anywhere. Wouldn't make the record. Now I've studied songwriting and some music theory, and I'm putting together all the music on my own for this particular project. And it really all starts from a very different place. It starts with a cause or a purpose that I'm inspired by. And then from there, that really inspires lyrics and typically a melody or a chorus. And none of it is written to music. It's all just melodies that kind of happen in my head. And then from there, I deconstruct what key that melody is in, or I'll play with the key, shift it up or down, and then I'll write the music at last, actually. So it's totally the opposite way that we used to work. And it's been really exciting to kind of write music that way, because then it truly becomes about what voices am I hearing? What is this cause particularly inspiring?
And you have like a process and a purpose then, like the steps unfold to you quite naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all driven by the cause and the purpose. So Stolen Sisters, which is the new song, you know, a fan and a friend on Facebook sent me a link to an article about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And I just was so moved by that article. It brought me to tears and brought me to... It just inspired me to basically write at the moment, sing that chorus. Just kind of came out, this whole idea of giving these girls and women a voice that don't have one.
And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I want to like set up the contrast here and play a little from Eyesore, one of your really popular songs, and then we can kind of hear that contrast. Okay, so quite a bit different here.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think Stolen Sisters is a heavier tune. I think people are going to associate it with kind of the heavier sound of Janice. And a lot of the newer stuff they're working on now is even heavier. So
we're talking with singer-songwriter David Scottney is here with his new music from the band Janice. What social causes do you hope would get more attention through music? Which issues do you want to hear more songs about? Did you see Janice when the band was touring? Do you have a favorite song or a memory from their concerts? We're at 800-642-1234. We're going to hear more of Janice covering Drive by the Cars. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the music of Janice and giving it a listen here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the song Stains from the group's 2012 album, Nox Aris. Frontman David Scottney is here talking about the band's new mission and his creative pursuits, singing, songwriting, making pizzas at his restaurant in Lake Geneva. What do you think of bands that try to raise awareness or funding for social causes through their music? How important are the lyrics when you're listening to music? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call now. Lisa is joining us from Janesville. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I would really like to see more songs addressing a crisis that we have with a significant number of people with mental health issues who slip through the cracks and end up placed in our prison system and our jails. That's an issue we've been struggling with our family for 25 years with a brother who we cannot get help for, who has severe mental health issues, and he's regularly in prison or jail.
Lisa, thank you so much for the call. David, another important issue to rally around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first song that we put out, you know, was a Drive cover, and it was about bipolar disorder. And I was inspired to do it because my family has been rallying around a family member for 20 plus years with severe, severe bipolar disorder, non-functioning disorder, and certainly in trouble with the law. So it's a cause that touches deep, very deeply for me. And you know, I'm hopeful to do even more songs about other types of mental illness, so that we can address kind of have a bigger national conversation about it, and really provide better support, better awareness, and hopefully save some more lives.
Well, let's hear some from your new song, Stolen Sisters. And this is an original song. Let's take a listen. So this is about missing and murdered Indigenous women at a time you were working on a new song to raise awareness on this issue. What are you trying to get at here?
So I had mentioned that this was a cause that was and thank you for reaching out to folks listening to offer ideas for other causes, because we are actively asking people to on Facebook or Instagram to share with us stuff that they're passionate about. Because we're always looking for new ideas. With this particular song, a friend and fan had sent me this article, and I had read about these missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and just was inspired by the idea of elevating their voices, of addressing some of the challenges that the Indigenous community has around trying to deal with this social kind of epidemic that they're struggling with. And you know, the more I learned about it, the more I realized that I had no idea how bad this was, or how disproportionately the women in the Indigenous community are affected by violence and whatnot. And there really isn't, even once we started researching on the cause, there really isn't great data out there, because the government has done such a poor job kind of keeping track of this. And because of the jurisdiction laws, too, if something happens to a tribal member in the Indigenous community, it's just mired in a horrible process where it can't really be addressed locally or even at a state level. It falls under federal jurisdiction and oftentimes just gets overlooked. So I really love the idea of bringing this statistic to light, shining a light on it. We're working with Sovereign Bodies Institute, a woman named Anita Lucchese, who's just a force of nature who's working on this cause for this movement. All the profits and proceeds for this song are being donated to her non-for-profit to help with this cause. So yeah, we hope for people who don't know about this or aren't aware of this social challenge, that they get inspired by the song, they learn about it, they do a little more research, and they get fired up like we are about trying to raise awareness.
Let's take another call. Richard in Eau Claire is here. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, so two, ideas for a for songs. One is the whole concern of human trafficking. I know when the when the Super Bowl was in the Twin Cities, there was a big issue about human trafficking in Eau Claire, targeting young women. But then another one is just the idea of work is good, because I think we have an aversion to work in this country, and maybe even a thought that hard work is even better than just work. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that those are both amazing ideas. Thank you for bringing them up. Human trafficking is a small part of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls issue. The more we kind of researched that, we found out that it's mostly tied to violence, domestic violence. I'm certainly aware of that being a huge, huge major issue and something that's, it's horrific that it's as bad as it is. I'd love to learn more about it, and I'd love to sink my teeth into, how we can kind of shine a light on that as well. And I love your hard work is good idea too. I feel the same way. I feel like the kind of collective work ethic, especially with these young kids these days, there's something awesome about that idea of kind of celebrating kind of just good hard work ethic.
Let's go to Francisco now in Sister Bay. Hi, Francisco.
Good morning. I have a comment for this young man that he would never hear from anybody else. What do they have in common? George Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Jackson, all the hero, all the soldiers, the Indian killers in America, Buffalo Bill, and all kind, Jesse James.
Francisco is looking for songs dedicated to more heroes, as I understand. Do you think about, thinking about songs and writing them around people and around a person?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really compelling idea. I haven't kind of wrapped my head around one particular kind of hero to tell a story around yet, mm-hmm. but I think it's a really, really interesting topic.
Would the band go on tour again?
that question seems to pop up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right now we're not planning on it. Right now we're really focused on producing these songs, and it's the difference between what we're doing now and what we did before. It was all about Janice before, and it was all about our music career and getting out there to tour and trying to get the band as successful as possible. Right now, this mission is really about. It's not about me. It's not about these. It's not about the band itself. It's really about these causes. So, and you can see that in the songwriting too. The songs on the old records are very introspective, very self-reflective, whereas these songs are just the opposite. They really have nothing to do with me almost. They're really focused on a cause and a purpose. No plan a tour lately, but we are working on more music, more videos, more causes. So the advocacy stuff is really our tour schedule right now.
How did you approach putting music behind Stolen Sisters and what it would sound like?
That's a great question. So that's been my biggest challenge over the last year or so, to really teach myself kind of songwriting. I spent some time with a music theory teacher. I worked with this amazing producer, engineer, Chris Granger, songwriter, producer, engineer, down in Nashville on the first version of Stolen Sisters, which got to a really great place. And I had kind of written it in the key of D minor, and it was 4 minutes long, and just wasn't quite happy with the music, the songwriting aspect. So we ended up very serendipitously getting in touch with David Bendith, who has worked with Breaking Benjamin and just tons of other platinum selling artists, and he's one of the best rock producers on the planet, in my opinion. And we were fortunate enough to spend some time, 6 days with him, re-engineering the whole song. And he really ripped the song down to the studs. We dropped it a semitone down to C sharp, and he kind of put me through what we call Bendith Bandcamp, where you're just kind of pushed into the wall in terms of your pulling out the best in you. And that was one of the most life-changing musical experiences I've ever had in my career.
You also put a call out for people to get involved in making the video. You asked people to record themselves saying, hear their voice.
Yes. And that's the way the video starts, actually. It's unique to just the video, so which was really cool. We actually involved friends and fans to I love the idea of simulating a protest. Because that's really what this song is about. It's really a good old-fashioned kind of protest song. You know, when I think of, like, Four Dead in Ohio, right? Neil Young going way back. Like, that's a protest song, and that's really the spirit of what this is about. And so we did. We had, and we actually collected layers and layers of voices, and it really sounds like a good old-fashioned protest song.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
David Scottney, singer-songwriter for Janice, a rock group producing music for social causes. Coming up, Attorney General Josh Call joins us to discuss his first year in office. Here's a little more from the Janice single, Stolen Sisters, set for release tomorrow. Back after a news update here on the Ideas Network. You have a line to Attorney General Josh Call here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. So we're touching down on a bunch of issues involving the state Justice Department. Legislation stalled in the Assembly on sexual assault kits. The State Elections Commission held in contempt for not scrubbing voter rolls as ordered by a judge. And we'll start with human trafficking, a growing statewide concern, and now a new report out from the Attorney General. Human trafficking involves the use of force or coercion to move someone, typically to make them have sex for money. Do you see situations in your community where sex trafficking is a troubling issue? Are you in law enforcement? Where do you see efforts to track and stop the sex trade? What are the challenges? We're at 800-642-1234. Josh Call is Attorney General of Wisconsin, and he took office a year ago. Attorney General Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So new data on the state Justice Department showing real inconsistency how law enforcement are handling sex trafficking crimes. What is going on here?
So the report that we released contains data that was collected from law enforcement agencies around the state regarding how those agencies are responding to human trafficking. And I think the biggest takeaway from the report, which is a really positive one, is that there is a growing recognition among people in law enforcement, and I also believe among the public in general, that human trafficking is an issue that impacts communities across the state of Wisconsin and across the country. The number of law enforcement agency heads who identified human trafficking as a significant problem increased significantly from a study done in 2013 to this report, and also the number who believe that it's happening in their jurisdiction has increased. And I don't think that that's because there's been a significant change in the amount of human trafficking. I think that's because there's an increasing recognition of the importance of taking this issue on, and that what historically may have been viewed as a prostitution case in many cases is actually a case where somebody's a victim of human trafficking.
So what do you see as additional work that needs to be done to address this issue in Wisconsin and stop some uneven reporting from one community to the next?
I think one of the things we need to do a better job of is collecting data generally about this crime. One of the things we talked about in our report is that we still don't believe that we have a great sense of what the overall numbers are around the state, and that's for a few different reasons. One is the definition of human trafficking under federal law is different from the definition under state law. But also, from a law enforcement perspective, it can be difficult in some cases to determine whether a case is one where somebody is engaged in prostitution or if upon further investigation they realize that somebody is a victim of trafficking. And so one of the things that law enforcement made clear in their survey responses was that they'd like to see more training to help with that issue. And so, you know, we're going to be working with law enforcement around the state to figure out how we can improve data collection, but also how we can do training, because what I want to make sure we see is that if there is a possibility that a case is a human trafficking case, that additional resources are going to be put into the investigation so that we can work to get to the bottom of those cases and hold the people who are the most serious offenders accountable, and that's the human traffickers.
Attorney General, let's move on to voter rolls and the litigation there. The State Elections Commission being held this week in contempt for not eliminating more than 100,000 from the voter rolls as ordered by the circuit court judge. What do you want to see happen there?
Well, first, I think it's critical that, you know, that our central premise here be that we want to make sure that nobody who is eligible to vote in Wisconsin is deterred from voting so long as the approach that's being taken is consistent with the law. Our right to vote is a fundamental right in our democracy. And what the Elections Commission did was they saw what happened in 2017 when the data that's at issue in this case was used, and they made a decision that they weren't going to be using that same type of data to purge voters from the rolls now. And there's a suit that was brought, and while a circuit court initially said that that purge had to happen, just recently a court of appeals stayed that order, stopped it from going into effect, and it also stopped the circuit court's contempt order from going into effect by staying that. So the case is still ongoing, but my view is that the position that the Elections Commission has taken is consistent with the statute and that they're doing their jobs appropriately. And, you know, we'll see how things play out in the courts ultimately.
Yeah, because, you know, there is an election in weeks from now. Is this a concern that we may not have all registered voters able to cast a ballot?
So the order that had been issued was stayed, which means essentially it's temporarily blocked. So right now, nobody has been purged from the voter rolls pursuant to what was that circuit court order. I think that the process will continue to play out probably over a course of months. But if people are concerned about the status of their voter registration, they should check on that. They should go to myvote.wi.gov.
Yeah. We're talking with Attorney General Josh Call, moving through a range of issues as we look ahead at 2020, back at 2019 with issues involving the State Justice Department. You can join in 800-642-1234. What do you think of state procedures for transmitting, processing, and storing sexual assault kits? Do you think the current legislation to better track these kits goes far enough? Call in. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. So, Attorney General, the Assembly Committee on Health held a public hearing without discussing legislation on sexual assault kits. You had requested that this legislation be brought up since it was introduced last May. What is going on here with this bill and untested sexual assault kits?
Yeah, I was disappointed to see that the Health Committee didn't take that legislation up. The state of Wisconsin had a backlog of thousands of untested sexual assault kits, and that led to a statewide initiative that led to the testing of the kits in cases where there was consent to test and where there wasn't a conviction, also in a little over 300 cases where there was a conviction. And what that backlog meant is that justice was delayed for survivors of sexual assault, and that in some cases, people who had committed serious violent offenses went unprosecuted. So we need to make sure there's not another backlog of untested sexual assault kits ever again in Wisconsin. To take that on, last year in 2019, we announced legislation with bipartisan authors that's designed to prevent a backlog. It puts clear timelines in place for when law enforcement needs to submit sexual assault kits to the crime labs. It also provides that data regarding sexual assault kits needs to be collected, and it provides for a retention period for sexual assault kits. The legislation has broad support. It's supported by the Wisconsin Chiefs of Police Association. It's supported by the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault and others. It passed the state Senate on a voice vote, and 56, a majority of the members of the state assembly, have co-sponsored this legislation. But Representative Joe Sanfilippo, the chair of the health committee, still has not held a hearing on that legislation.
And
there
has
no reason that it shouldn't go forward.
Well, he has concerns. There's some trepidation there. What are some reluctances that you're hearing out of lawmakers?
I have not heard from a single lawmaker who opposes this legislation. And I don't think any of them have publicly said that they do oppose it. There is no good reason not to go forward with this legislation, and I think it is time for him to take this up.
Let's look for at the Crime Lab state budget. One of the last times we talked, the state budget had been approved for more than $700,000 in additional spending to add 7 more analysts to the state crime lab. What is the status of this new addition? Have these positions been hired?
My understanding is that my recollection is that the hiring process is underway for all of those positions, and that they will be filled soon. But we are working to make sure that when evidence is submitted to our crime labs, that it's turned around in a timely way, because when it's not, that can delay justice for everybody who's involved in court cases. So with those additional resources, it's going to help us work to reduce turnaround times. We got about half of the positions that we had requested in the budget, and that was based in part on a study that had been conducted by an outside group. So we have more room to go on that front, but we are moving in the right direction on the crime labs, and I think that's going to be reflected in decreased turnaround times over a period of time.
And last November, you had announced you had been able to stop the backlog of the untested sexual assault kits. Are you keeping up with them now?
Yeah, so when I took office, my predecessor had mostly completed testing on the previously untested sexual assault kits in the backlog. But there were a little over 300 kits from cases in which there was a conviction, but the state had agreed to test those kits. And so we did recently complete testing on those kits as well. Some of them are awaiting confirmed testing results, but the testing has been completed. And now making sure that we keep up with the kits is going to require a couple things. One is we need to make sure that the kits are being submitted to the crime labs in a timely fashion. And that's why the legislation we were talking about before is so important, because that will help us make sure that that happens. And then secondly, we need to make sure that our crime labs have the resources they need to turn those kits around quickly. The recent budget, as we talked about, is a big step in the right direction. But some additional resources for the crime labs will help moving forward as well.
Talking with Attorney General Josh Call, who's on the line, what questions do you have for the Attorney General? How do you think Wisconsin should be handling legal settlements involving state government? Should the Attorney General be required to receive the legislature's approval? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Attorney General Josh Call here on the Ideas Network. With us in the morning show, I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we're looking at pressing Justice Department issues with State Attorney General Josh Call on the line. We're looking at issues like PFAS contamination and how state residents are affected. How do you want the Attorney General involved in efforts to regulate and clean up these so-called forever chemicals that are in state water bodies? Have you taken part in listening sessions around PFAS? What do you want to convey? How do you want the Attorney General to act in lawsuits involving state government? Join in any point, 800-642-1234, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Attorney General, in December last month, you held a joint listening session with the DNR to address the issue of PFAS. What would you like to see happen there to address safe drinking water in Wisconsin?
That's right. We held a joint listening session, and this is an issue that has been impacting several communities around the state and has had a particularly significant impact in the Marinette and Peshtigo area. So I wanted to hear from residents of that area about exactly what it is that they're most concerned that we do as we work to remedy this. The DNR announced previously that a case had been referred to the Wisconsin Department of Justice for a potential enforcement action, and the DNR is also looking at other areas where there's potential contamination. And one of the things I want to make sure we do in seeking a remedy is making sure that the remedy that we're trying to get is one that best serves the interests of the people of that area. No question, a critical part of what we need to do is to make sure that Wisconsinites around the state, including in those areas that have been impacted certainly, have access to safe and clean drinking water. That should be a given for everybody in Wisconsin. But I also wanted to hear from people about other concerns that they had, and it was really valuable. People talked about concerns that they had about the impacts to their health. They talked about concerns they had about where PFAS might have spread, in addition to where it's been identified as having contaminated water. And so, you know, we're going to take people's concerns into account. We're obviously going to review the facts and take the law into account, and hopefully get to a resolution that's going to be the type of resolution that is going to do the most good for people in that area and help protect clean and safe drinking water.
Let's take a call. Dave is joining us from Madison. Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate the topic that we're discussing this morning, and PFAS certainly, I think, is an issue in the contamination of groundwater and soils with that. It should be an issue that everybody's concerned about. But I think over the last 40, 50, even more years, there have been a whole soup, if you will, or stew of additional contaminants that have been, you know, let into the environment and drinking water. And there really has been no study, very little, in my mind, action that's been taken to understand what the effects of, you know, this mix, as I said, this stew of different chemicals is, certainly on each other within drinking water and then also within the human body. And I realize that's a tough issue to start to tackle, but anything we could do to prevent these things in the future certainly would be helpful, in addition to, you know, whatever type of punitive action we could take.
Attorney General, how can environmental law keep up with what Dave describes as a stew of chemicals and hold polluters accountable?
Well, I think what we're seeing with PFAS is a good example of, you know, where some of the challenges lie and what we need to be doing. We are still in the process of learning quite a bit about PFAS. There are a whole family of chemicals, and there are two where there's very clear scientific evidence of the harmful effects that they have, but there are lots of other variants on those compounds that we still don't know a lot about. And even with the ones we do know a lot about, you know, figuring out exactly what levels are unsafe in the blood, for example, is something that there's more work to be done on. What I think we need to make sure we're doing is investigating whether there are harmful health effects from compounds that are going into our water supply or our food. And if there are those harmful effects, we need to make sure that that information is made public and that we're taking action to address it. And companies have a responsibility here, too. If they are adding chemicals to our water supply, our food, you know, they need to make sure that those chemicals are safe. And if they learn that they're not, they need to take action immediately to redress that. You know, unfortunately, PFAS has been around for a long time. And, you know, it's clear that some of these compounds cause harm. And that's now going to lead to legal actions. You know, we need companies to get out in front of these issues if there are problems so that we make sure we're keeping people safe.
Talking with Josh Call, Attorney General of Wisconsin. We're catching up with him on a range of issues involving work at the Justice Department. Taking another call now, let's go to Steve in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi. You know, my question has to do with open records. You know, it appears that there's a lot of government officials, whether it's school administrators or even Governor Evers, you can probably lump him in there, who just don't follow the open records request. And I'm just wondering what the Attorney General is doing specifically to track the number of open records requests and, you know, prosecuting, if possible, government officials who believe they're above the law and not follow open records request laws that are on the books.
Steve, thank you for the question. Attorney General?
I think it's a critical part of our democracy that we have fair and or open and transparent government. And so there are a few things that we do at the Department of Justice to help make sure that that's the case. One is we have an Office of Open Government, and that office responds to public records requests that are made to the Wisconsin Department of Justice, but it also provides guidance on public records issues to anybody who submits questions for public records advice. We also put out a guidebook annually from the Department of Justice that provides guidance on how the public records laws should be complied with. Another step we took earlier this year is, or last year, I guess, was we eliminated non-disclosure agreements that my predecessor had required all new DOJ employees to sign. And we've worked to increase transparency in the AG opinion writing process. The one thing I will say, though, is in some cases, responding can be a challenge because the legal analysis is that the presumption is in favor of the disclosure of public records, but a balancing test needs to be conducted to balance the burden on the government of complying with the request with the benefit to the public and disclosure. And again, public officials really need to err on the side of disclosure, but different people can apply that balancing test in good faith in different ways in some different cases. And that's one of the things that I think has led to some of the challenges we've seen. But generally speaking, it's critical that we have fair and open government. And if people do have questions, I encourage them to reach out to our Office of Open Government.
We have time for one just more quick question here regarding the opioid epidemic. You declined last year to join the multi-state settlement with the company that makes OxyContin, Purdue Pharma. You decided not to join the settlement because you said it didn't achieve justice. What is the next step here on this particular issue?
So there is a case going on right now. We filed a suit last year against two Purdue Pharma entities and Richard Sackler, who's former president and co-chair of the board of Purdue Pharma, alleging that they had engaged in false and deceptive marketing practices that contributed to the opioid epidemic. We also joined multi-state investigations into opioid distributors, and my predecessor had joined multi-state investigations into opioid manufacturers. So that's still ongoing. The suit against Purdue is part of a bankruptcy action now. Purdue has declared bankruptcy, and a number of states and also localities that have sued Purdue are part of that bankruptcy action. So those proceedings continue. What I think is critical is that we work to get justice in these cases, which to me means accountability, explaining what led to this epidemic, and getting funds recovered from those whose unlawful act has contributed to it, so we can get those funds to communities across the state of Wisconsin.
We have to end
and
it.
Work to remediate this.
Right there. Thank you so much, Attorney General Josh Call, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Ideas Network.